the basic text, and it will be read by Wade Yu of Honolulu, Hawaii. And the reading, I believe, will also be put up on the screen. I'm not sure. Yes.
Aloha, family. My name's Wade. I'm an addict. The process of recovery and the spiritual principles of NA are a power greater than himself for this atheist addict. Atheists recover too. I grew up without a teaching of God. My father, though raised in a very devout family, renounced all faith in the religion he had been taught. I too couldn't believe that there was something out there that had some magical power to do the impossible, to defy the laws of physics. There are many things beyond my understanding, but to attribute them to a deity was, in my mind, just another way of avoiding the fear of the unknown. Too many people use God or the devil, as it were, to deflect credit due or to avoid taking responsibility for their mistakes. I viewed the institution of religion as a means of controlling the masses, and I didn't want to be controlled. I made it my mission to refute this God in which other people believed and put their faith, but they resisted. In fact, in spite of all my efforts, I convinced not one person that they were wrong and that I was right. I just isolated myself all the more. So when I got clean, I was apprehensive, to say the least. However, I was ready for a new way of life. So I just focused on today. And just for today, I was on step one. And there was no God in step one. I got a sponsor who taught me about showing up and being dependable. He taught me about how to be available and not to be judgmental. He shared his experience and allowed me mine. The foundation of my recovery was laid in our relationship. I wanted what he had and was beginning to get it. We moved on to step two, and it was time to cross the God bridge. I went on a quest to find a power greater than myself. I stepped out of my comfort zone and sought out people of both conventional and unconventional religious faiths. I opened my mind to what worked for others. I questioned, I listened, and I practiced. My search brought me to a number of different spiritual and religious groups, but I didn't find my place among any of them. What I was looking for was something quantifiable, something tangible to put on display. See this? This is what I believe. This is the God of my understanding. Maybe if I could find that God, recovery would be easier, but that's not what I found. With no breakthroughs, feeling lost and dejected, I decided to approach step two another way. Perhaps the steps, the fellowship, service, and my sponsor would be enough to help me find recovery without a God. Steps 3, 7, and 11 pose the greatest challenge because of their references to God and prayer. Steps 2 and 6 required some creative thinking as well. In practicing the second step, NA and the group became a power greater than me. By participating and being of service, I was able to put the needs of the group and the suffering addict before my wants. My self-centeredness began to ease, and a restoration to sanity began to take place. I was right where I was supposed to be. I could see that my struggles weren't in vain, even when times were hard. I was experiencing life and growing as a result. In the third step, I began turning my will and my life over to the process of recovery and to the spiritual principles that could be found in the steps. I was told to be honest about my belief, even if it was devoid of a God. Otherwise, the remaining steps would be of no value. I started to have faith in what recovery could offer me. With the strength and courage I found, I continued with the rest of the steps. In step 6, my defects of character were in the forefront of my mind. As I became more aware of their effects on my life, I tried to control my defects by suppressing them. The result was that they seemed to become worse, causing more harm, both to those close to me and to myself. I reached the place where I was entirely ready to be rid of my defects, and I moved on to step 7. Believing that humility was an important aspect of the 7th step, I went to others for their experience. By earnestly seeking the experience of others, including those with whom I had little in common, I was performing acts of humility. I endeavored to live life by spiritual principles in order to relieve my shortcomings. Instead of merely trying to be rid of my shortcomings, I sought to replace them with something positive. Step 11 was a bit of a conundrum. I'm an atheist who believes in the power of prayer, I became known for saying. The statement, meant to shock people, became a conviction. Prayer wasn't getting on my knees and petitioning a deity. Rather, it was how I lived. As a prayer, all my decisions became important and relevant. regardless of how insignificant they might seem on the surface. I saw meditation as a tool or exercise to help expand my awareness. It helped to put me in the moment and to maintain my presence of mind throughout the day. The result was a spiritual awakening, a realization that I could stay clean, work the steps, be an upstanding member of Narcotics Anonymous, have a life worth living, and carry a message of recovery. All this was possible without a God. My initial fear of not being able to stay clean because I could not come to believe in a God had passed. I now had proof that it was possible, and the proof was in how I lived. I have sponsored many people, some who struggle with believing in God and others who have a firm religious faith. Those who struggle find that they are not alone and are accepted as they are. Those with strong faith find that they too can share openly with me and their beliefs are welcomed and accepted. Either way, my sponsees and I have the opportunity to grow together. I trust that what they come to believe has a power to help them, and they have the same trust in what I have come to believe. Sometimes we disagree on the particulars, but the particulars aren't what keep us clean. What keeps us clean is the choice that each of us makes not to pick up and to live this way of life to the best of our ability. This is a spiritual program, not a religious one. I try different approaches to working the steps. I still read and try to expand my knowledge on spiritual topics, and I constantly review my experience and contemplate its meaning in my life. This isn't to say that I don't question what I believe from time to time or that I don't struggle, because I do. Life isn't always easy. Sometimes I feel alone during hard times. Believing in God is alluring because I know others find comfort there, but I do not. Today, I do have a spiritual solution, however. The steps provide me with a framework for applying spiritual principles. Service acts as a conduit to relieve my self-centered thinking. The fellowship reminds me that I'm not alone, and my sponsor is a guide through the process. I continue to be a seeker. Anyone with a desire to stay clean can stay clean. Thank you.
Thank you, Wade. Okay, we will now hear from Jeremy S., the author of the story.
I'm Jeremy, I'm an addict. Thanks, Tina. Thank you, Wade. You made it. So I came into the meeting not really, I came without a plan. Like, I just wanted to be open to whatever came up, and what's come up for me is not what I expected. I have some feelings coming up hearing the story being read. I haven't looked at it in a long time, and so what's coming up in me is a lot of gratitude and feelings of nostalgia, and I think those are the big things that are on top for me right now, and they're like pretty intense. I did not expect to have intense feelings coming up. So thanks, Francis and Wade and everybody else that's helping to put this thing on and giving me the opportunity to share. Not a lot of people know that my story is in the basic text, and it's not something I generally talk about. When I wrote the story, I was living in Chicago at the time, and there are quite a few people in Chicago that know because they were there when I was writing it. But I live in North Carolina now, and there are very few people here that know, because it's just not something I talk about. I do talk about not believing in God, because that comes up for me from time to time. And generally, the only times I even share about that in meetings is there's like two times when I really share about that. One, when I feel like there's somebody else that needs to hear that message, because if they don't hear it, they might leave. And two, when I personally feel like I don't belong and I need to make space for myself so I can feel like I can stay in the seat that I'm in. But generally speaking, being an atheist doesn't define my recovery today. it is a part of who I am, and it does come up, and it shows up in how I work the steps, and it shows up in how I sponsor, though not directly. Yeah, it's just a piece of who I am. There's a lot more to me than just that piece. But there was a time when that piece was the only thing I could see. When I first got clean, I remember reading the second step in the book and being suspicious and looking at the third step and not like putting the book down and believing that this wasn't for me. That Narcotics Anonymous could not help me because it required a belief in a God. But I didn't really have anywhere else to go either. I was sick of living the life that I was living. And the thing that I really remember about my first meeting was a couple things. Number one, there was somebody in the meeting that was really angry and they expressed their anger. And what really impressed me about the meeting was the way everybody else in the group held space for that one person, despite what they were saying was caustic. They let her share, they let her be where she was at. They didn't try to fix her. They just held space for her. I had a high level of respect for them not trying to fix her or try to make her think and believe something different. They just accepted her for who she was and where she was. And it made an impression on me. And the other thing was how people treated me, because at that point, I didn't think this would work for me and I didn't consider myself a member, but people welcomed me and they wanted me to feel comfortable and welcome in the space that they were in. So the work that they were doing wasn't just about themselves. It wasn't just about the club, so to speak. It reached out into their lives beyond Narcotics Anonymous. So I valued that too. So those things were the things that kept me coming in the very beginning. So the theme is of this is like what that was then, this is now kind of thing. And what that makes me think about is when I wrote this story back in 2005. What I didn't realize at the time in writing the story is that it was going to open up a can of worms for me. Up to that point, I had done, I don't want to say the minimum, but like I did what I had to do to recover. And I kind of skirted the God issue as best I could. I dealt with it when it came up and that's about as much as I did. But what happened when I wrote my story is I began to be acutely aware of the differences and I stopped seeing the similarities. And this didn't happen overnight. Like it just became this progression and it became easier and easier to see all the differences. And I don't know that it was harder, but I just didn't see the similarities as much. And so what happened is I kind of slowly pulled away from NA. I pulled out of service. My meeting attendance dropped. I never stopped going to meetings entirely. And I kept a sponsor. But my involvement, just I really backed off a lot. And most of it was because I felt kind of like a crisis of identity, I guess. I felt as a member like I didn't belong and that membership in Narcotics Anonymous was in question. Because I was stuck on this idea that that in Narcotics Anonymous, the solution to the problem was something I didn't believe in. And that brought up the question, like, if I don't believe in the solution, That's how I saw it at the time. If I don't believe in the solution, how does it make sense for me to be a member? And so that question just loomed in my mind. And over time, I kind of just faded back. And I would show up to my home group, and there were numerous people that would let me know that they would like for me to share in the meeting, but I just wouldn't. I didn't feel comfortable sharing anymore. And so I was quiet most of the time. And I'm a quiet guy, I'm introverted, and I don't share a lot anyway, but I went for significant periods of time without sharing at all in meetings. And there are people here today that will tell you that because they were there. But but I also kept in touch with my sponsor. And our step work had kind of slowed, or my step work with him slowed down because he was having some health issues. But at some point we got together and we were going over I did a summary of the first three steps because he had some memory issues that came up and didn't remember me, some of the step work we had done previously. And so I did a summary of the first three steps. And the thing that he was really aware of was that throughout the summary, I was translating God out of the steps in order to work the steps. And this is just something that I've done since I started working the steps when I first got here. But he was really aware of it and had an observation that I hadn't even considered. And he was like, so this is kind of a paraphrase of what he said to me. He's like, so you have to do, to get the same results as everybody else, you have to do an extra layer of work when you translate God out of the steps. I hadn't really thought about it that way, but I was, yeah, that's what I have to do. And he's like, if you have to do extra work to get the same results as everybody else, that's grounds for a resentment. And I hadn't really considered that. So he sent me off onto my fourth step, specifically to look at my resentments at Narcotics Anonymous. In the context of my relationship with Narcotics Anonymous as a whole, but that was a piece that he really wanted me to look at. And when I started to take that look, I realized that I had some deep resentments. And there were people, as I was going through that process, that I leaned on to help me through that process. There were people that were afraid that doing that work was going to cause me to leave the fellowship altogether. And to be honest, I thought that might be one of the results that took place out of working that fourth step. But what ultimately happened is, yes, I got to come face to face with my resentments. And I got to see things about NA that I disagree with. But the other thing I saw was that I was continuing to come even with all this stuff going on inside of me. And that there were things here that I valued. And in the end, I wasn't willing to give the things I valued up and walk away. And so I have found resolution for a lot of that stuff. There are still things I disagree with, but whatever. I mean, where do I go in my life that I don't disagree with something? And what I've realized is that that's like all about me getting caught up in the differences instead of the similarities. And when I get caught up in the differences, what happens is I get separated from you guys. I get separated from the things that are important to me, the things that I value, the things that feed me. And when I focus on the similarities, I find connection. And the connection has been like a really important piece to me. For most of my life, I have felt disconnected. I grew up in a family that moved every few years. I never kept friends for a very long period of time because within a couple of years, we moved to another state. And as an adult, I've stayed in places longer, but building friendships and maintaining friendships is a challenge for me. And so I've done a lot of work to foster connection in my life. And it's through those connections that I see similarities. Like when I'm in connection with you, like what you believe when it comes to a God is not that important to me. What's important to me is who you are and how you and I connect and interact with each other, and how that relationship flows and grows. And like, those are the things that are important to me. Again, just like my story, being in the story is a small piece, and being an atheist is a small piece of who I am today. I see that as a small piece in my relationships with other people too. And it's not significant enough to keep me from connecting with you. And in fact, I don't want it to be that significant, because I value the connection. So the place that I'd say I am today, as compared to 2005 when I wrote the story, is I'm a lot more aware of the things I do that both foster connection, but also foster disconnection. And I can see when I'm participating in the things that foster disconnection, and I have a choice today. The pandemic has made it easy for me to disconnect in some ways. I'm not going to meetings in person. I've gone to a couple in, you know, since March, literally two. And so I don't have physical connection really with people in recovery right now. And it's easy to get caught up in that. But I've had connection over Zoom, both here in Asheville, North Carolina, where I live, and back in Chicago, where I moved here like 3 years ago, a little over 3 years ago. So I've reconnected with people there that I was, you know, that connection was slipping away because of distance. And now because of like the Paradise Strong meeting and what, I see my connection growing again. And Narcotics Anonymous, it's interesting. Like, so when I was using my connection or my access to the world and my connection, all got smaller, it shrank. And what being clean and being Narcotics Anonymous has done is to expand my world. I did that through my involvement in service and now being willing to show up when asked to share. And with Zoom, I can go to meetings all over the place. And I'll be honest with you, I don't go to lots of other places to go to meetings. When asked, I'll show up. So I showed up in the UK like a few weeks ago because somebody was like, hey, there's a meeting going on. You should go. I'll see you there. I'm like, okay, I'll go. So I went. But the other thing is I find that I'm going to more meetings online than I was in person because I have the time and it's easy. I don't have to get in my car and drive across town. I just sit down at my desk and turn on the computer. And being an introvert, this kind of medium of meeting with other people and going to meetings has worked pretty well for me. I know people that really have struggled with meetings on Zoom and they're craving sitting in a circle with other people. And I'm not saying I don't miss that, but I haven't struggled with it like other people have. And I look forward to a day when I can sit in a circle with people again and feel comfortable and confident that we're going to be okay. None of us are going to get sick, but and I'm grateful that I haven't suffered like some of the people that I know have suffered, because I know people that haven't gone to meetings on Zoom, and here in Asheville, like all the meetings are on Zoom. They have to drive out of town into rural parts outside of outside of Asheville where to find a meeting, and even then it's challenging. So so I don't know. I think the thing that I do today more than anything else is I try to hear, like, whether it's sitting in a meeting or talking one-on-one to somebody, is I try to hear what people are saying and what they're going through and what they're feeling. And I try to connect with that. I try to relate with my own experience. And to make that connection. When I get caught up in what's happened to me or what my experience specifically is and what my feelings are, when I'm trying to connect with somebody else, and I get lost in that instead of what's going on with them, I lose the connection. And I'm aware of that kind of stuff today because of the work that I've done in the steps and other work that I've done. Not all the work I've done has been just in Narcotics Anonymous. I have sought outside help for some of that stuff, and I'm grateful for the help that I've gotten. It's helped me to be more present for my own recovery, and it's helped me to be more present for the recovery of the people in the fellowship that seek out my experience and that show up to meetings and that I care about. So I guess the other piece is that, like, I'm not done yet. Like, my recovery is still happening. There's still things for me to learn and still areas of my life that need work, that I need change in. Some of them I'm not aware of because, you know, that's how it works sometimes. And some of them I am. I would like for it to be easier for me to connect. I would like to not have to struggle with feeling apart from and disconnected. I would like to feel okay in my own skin more often than I do. I would like to feel and recognize that I'm a part of when I am a part of, right? Like, my belief that I'm not separates me from the fact that I am. And sometimes it's hard for me to see that and recognize that. So I continue to come to Narcotics Anonymous because I continue to get value out of it. I continue to grow and I continue to find new ways to see the steps and how they work in my life and how they work in all of our lives. And I continue to find inspiration here. And I am a witness to the change that has already happened in my life. So it's easier to see change in other people's lives, but I've been clean for a while and I've been clean long enough to see that there's been a profound change in my life. And I was thinking about this earlier today that oftentimes when I say that Narcotics Anonymous has changed my life, that I don't really think about how profoundly true that is. If it wasn't for Narcotics Anonymous, I would not be anywhere near where I am today. I mean, I don't know where I'd be because I didn't take that path, but when I got here, I wasn't on a path. I was just kind of wandering lost. And I'm in a different place today. I have direction in my life. I have people who care and love me. And I care and love about them. And I have a capacity to do that is greater now than it's ever been. And that has come from showing up here and doing the work and working the steps and being of service and being open and willing to do things that made me uncomfortable in the moment because I didn't know how to do them and I was afraid that I couldn't do them. But I did them anyway. And I continued to come back and I learned that I could do them. And there are still things for me to learn. So there's, you know, a lot of what I've learned about the learning process here is that it's uncomfortable, but it's not permanent, right? The learning process is permanent, but being uncomfortable is not permanent, right? I step into something, I push the envelope, I step out of my comfort zone, and then as I learn and grow, things get easier. Like, I'm a musician, so that's like part and parcel of, as to how I practice my music. Like, I look at passages in the music that are challenging and difficult and hard, and I work through them until they're easy. I practice them until they're simple, and then I can put them back in the context of the whole piece. And I do that with my life. I take the things that are challenging and hard and difficult, and I focus in on them and do the work, and I make them easier. I take the discomfort out of them, and at least that's the attempt. There are certain things that I still have to work on. So, I'm not sure how much time I have.
So 15 minutes.
What's that?
15 minutes.
Oh, wow. More than I thought. Well, what was I thinking about? Oh yeah. The thing that I was thinking about is just like being aware of the similarities and the differences. One of the ways that I know that I'm caught up in the differences is when I'm sitting in a meeting and I hear people talking about God or spiritual principles or whatever, and there's this voice in my head that's calling them out silently. I don't do it out loud, but it's in my head calling people out or disagreeing. And when I hear that voice, I know that I'm in the differences, that's what I'm looking at. And because what that voice does is make me not hear what you're saying. What it does is make you over there and me over here. We're no longer connected. But when I'm in the similarities, what I see and hear is what you're saying, right? And I take it for what it is. It's not a threat. It's not an assault against me. Because that's when I'm in the differences, that's how I can perceive talk about God. So that's one of the ways that I'm really clear about when I'm in differences and when I'm in similarities. So see what else is coming up for me in this moment.
We actually have 5 minutes left. I'm sorry.
You had
5 minutes left.
Okay. Good. That sounds easier.
I apologize.
No worries. One of the things that's hard for me to see, and this is a part of my ongoing work and in the steps and otherwise, is the thing that's hard for me to see is the impact that I have on others, in particular, the positive impact. I can see the negative impact. It seems like that's just loud and clear most of the time. But the positive impact on others has been really something that I have to take time and put energy in and seeing. And I asked Wade to read my story today because he had expressed to me that it had a positive impact in his life. And I don't even really know how to describe how that makes me feel to know that that my story, my experience, my life, my whatever, that that I have an impact that's positive in the world. And part of that impact is a result of being here in Narcotics Anonymous. It's a result of being willing to show up and do things that I've never done before and live a different way of life, make choices that in the moment were challenging and difficult, and to find people that would rally around me and support me in those choices and be present for me when it's been hard. Because those people have had an impact on me. And I want to carry that forward, right? Like, I don't necessarily know the best way to do that most of the time. But what I have learned is that if I'm willing to show up, if I'm willing to be present, if I'm willing to be vulnerable and share who I am, that I don't have to know how that's all going to work. I don't have to know how that's going to play out. That my job is to show up and be present and to let you see me for who I really am. And that if I can do that, that the rest happens. A message is carried. I don't know how it's going to look. I don't know how it works out, but it does. And so my hope is that, well, for me, that I continue to show up, that I continue to be present, that I continue to do the things that help me to be more in connection, more present. And that, you know, and my hope for everybody else in recovery is that that you guys are doing the same thing, that you're showing up and doing the things that you need to do, whatever that looks like. Because what it looks like isn't that important to me. It's the results that we get that I think matter. So, so I think that's about it for me. Thanks. Before I finish, I just want to say that I want to say thank you to everybody involved with Paradise Strong putting this on, and everybody showing up here today and being a part of the speaker jam. And I look forward to hearing the other speakers today. I'm excited about that because I do believe that we're all in this together. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much. Everyone, please help me thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Definitely. I relate to you.
Smashing, Jeremy.
Awesome, Jeremy.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Love you, Jeremy.
Okay. All right. So I'm still Tina and an addict. Thank you so much again. Now we are going to move on to the next story, which is, I am so grateful that God hears an addict's prayer, which is on page 373. And it will be read by Gregory B. from Chico, California.